markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are higher, led by technology shares. We check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 0.5% up 17 points. Dow futures up 0.2% or 74 points. And NASDAQ futures up 0.7% or 75 points. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd, yield 3.87%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.36%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.2% on 94 cents at $78.02 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.1% or $2.50 at $18.13.30 an ounce. The euro 1.0639 against the dollar. British pound 1.2026. The yen 133.73. And Bitcoin up about 0.5% at about $16,600. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. John.
All right, Karen, thanks very much. It is now 6:56 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks, some of the names that are moving in the pre-market. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. Here's a quiz. What stock brought a windfall of $17 billion for shorts last year or this year, 2022? You know, it's your first stock.
It is my first stock, but I just wanted to make sure that I was right. Just staring.
You gave me this quizzical look.
I'm just staring at him.
It's not Stump the Reporter.
Tesla is the first stock. TSLA. Did I win the pop quiz? Shares are up about 4.4% this morning. This comes actually after an analyst stamp of approval, reconfirmation, I would say. Morgan Stanley of Adam Jonas over there, the analyst, saying that he de-rating in the EV company stock has created an opportunity. He did lower his price target to $250 from $330, but he is sticking to his overweight rating. Tesla shares are now trading about $117. So basically he's saying that those wave of analyst downgrades that had pressured the stock in the last couple of days and arguably weeks, he's sticking to his guns here and saying, well, look, that is actually making it a little bit cheaper to hop into. So nevertheless, Tesla shares, TSLA, up 4.4%, down 117, or excuse me, trading around 117 a share. And this is also important because it's coming after about 7 days of losses. Yesterday was its first positive day. Let's see if it holds into today.
Maybe you can get a Tesla in a peer-to-peer car sharing marketplace. I have a car sharing program at my house with a teenager. It doesn't work. What's this next stock?
Let's talk about the stock called Get Around. GETR shares are up. Well, they were up about 3.3%. They are now up about 1%. This is a stock that was initiated with an overweight rating and just a $1.50 price target. One of those really tiny stocks, but worth remembering because it's one of the only movers out there this morning over at Piper Sandler. They're saying that the platform looks well positioned to provide, to your point, peer-to-peer car sharing marketplace. The other one I really want to point out here is the oil story, because you are seeing oil come down a little bit this morning, and that is having a ripple effect into Exxon and Chevron as well. XOM is your ticker, down about 0.7%, and Chevron not far behind is CVX, down about 0.8%. A lot of this has to do with this idea of, is a Chinese reopening inflationary or disinflationary?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story. We were talking about that today because it's like, I'm kind of confused. Second largest economy reopens, good, right? Oil run. But then you have COVID spread, possibly.
Right. We had an oil analyst on Early Edition this morning, Bloomberg Television, actually talking about, well, look, China's domestic tourism is going to ramp up from the reopening, which is, of course, a bullish driver. But the spread of COVID, to your point, could be a bearish one.
All right, Bloomberg Radio and TV Markets correspondent Kriti Gupta. Thank you. Appreciate it, Kriti. And looking at stocks as a whole, ahead of the open, S&P futures up 17 right now. Dow futures up 74. And the NASDAQ futures up 74. And for Karen Moscow, I'm John Tucker. And stay with us. Just ahead, you can hear Bloomberg Surveillance.
Live from the financial capital of the world, broadcasting across the globe, this is WBBR New York, Bloomberg 1130.
I don't see any reason for the Fed to be moving that 2% target.
We finally have come to grips with
markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are on the rise this morning, led by tech shares. We get to the first word breaking news desk for today's morning call. And here's Tatiana Darie. Tatiana, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Futures are holding around the highs with the Dow contracts up 62 points, S&P's up 16, and NASDAQ up 72. The U.S. 10-year yield is lower by 1 basis point to 3.87% this morning. Oil is down 2, and the dollar is weaker by about 2/10. Elsewhere, European stocks are slightly higher at this hour, while Asian markets fell overnight. Back in the U.S., on the economic front today, we have jobless claims at 8:30. In early trading this morning, Tesla on the move again, shares up 5% after Morgan Stanley said shares are more attractive after the recent decline, and Netflix is up 1 after an upgrade at CFRA. In other news, Get Around was initiated with an overweight at Piper Sandler, and keep an eye on Skechers shares after Piper gave it a neutral rating, calling its valuation fair. Live from the First and Breaking News Desk, I'm Tatiana Daria. Karen.
All right, Tatiana, thank you. And here live breaking news over your Bloomberg type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. More than 2,300 Southwest flights are already canceled today, marking the fourth straight day the airline has canceled more than 50% of its scheduled flights. In all, more than 13,000 Southwest flights of the past week have been canceled. The U.S. is reinstating mandatory COVID-19 testing for airline travelers arriving from China. The CDC says the new measures follow a surge in infections in China and a lack of transparency from Chinese officials. A massive fire at a Cambodian hotel casino has killed about a dozen people. In the NBA, the Nets won their 10th straight. The Wizards and Warriors won. In the NHL, the Bruins beat the Devils 3-1. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Karen.
Thank you. It is 6:42 on Wall Street, and we turn to news in science and technology now with the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. And here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. South Korea's semiconductor production in November fell by the most since the global financial crisis, pointing to a further cooling of overseas demand for tech components. Chip production shrank for a fourth straight month, falling 15% from a year earlier, for the largest drop since 2009, according to data from the National Statistics Office. Lithium will get less expensive in 2023, this according to a Chinese supplier of the battery metal, potentially offering some relief to electric vehicle makers squeezed by soaring costs. More supply has emerged to trim abnormally high margins for lithium producers, according to the chairman of Sinomine Resource Group. And the value of IPOs and M&As in Israel's tech industry this year fell substantially from 2021 levels. Rising interest rates and economic uncertainty forced a reckoning, according to a report by PwC. Found there were 72 deals in 2022, down from 171 the previous year, with most of transactions taking place in the first half of the year. And that's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. John.
All right, Karen, thanks a lot. Appreciate it. It is 6:44 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in the nation's capital include, well, political prognosticators are facing a mountain of unknowns for the coming year. Starting with whether President Joe Biden is going to seek a second term. A great piece from Bloomberg Opinion. It raises all sorts of questions for the new year. And who better to explore these questions with this morning? Joining us is Wendy Schiller, director of the Center for American Politics and Policy at Brown University. Always a pleasure, Professor. Thanks for being with us. Hey, President Biden, will he seek another term? There are other cliffhangers, including whether former President Donald Trump will be indicted, whether Kevin McCarthy is going to succeed in getting elected Speaker of the House. Let's start with Joe Biden. How do we divine what his plans might be?
Well, he's the leader of the Democratic Party. He's the leader of, quote-unquote, the free world. It seems, very, very likely that he will decide to announce that he is seeking the presidency again in 2024, if only as a placeholder. In other words, you know, the Democrats feel like they came off a good year of productivity and they sort of narrowly escaped somewhat of a looming disaster in the midterms. They did much better than people think. And things in the economy seem to be less dire going to 2023 than people thought a couple months ago. So it doesn't make any sense not to run. You know, you have a whole technically a whole year to file, but obviously, you know, you want people to believe that you're still going to be there after 2024 for anything that you want to get done in the next 2 years. So it makes sense to announce. I mean, you can always change your mind. You can always drop out. You can always withdraw. There doesn't seem to be a very solid Democratic backbencher that could take his place easily to lead the party in 24. So it makes no sense not to run.
We know he's running for president. Donald Trump, is he going to be indicted anytime soon?
You know, I think there are two very strong looming issues for the country in terms of literally stability in the system. You know, we've kind of gone through the elections. We made it through the elections, and the elections seem to work for the most part. So that element of our democracy seems to be stable. But if you do not have a stable Speaker of the House, you can't run the federal government. If you don't have a stable majority party, you can't run the federal government. So this is really, really important that Kevin McCarthy, if he's going to be Speaker, gets elected smoothly, and that he can control his party, not to mention the debt ceiling coming up. But just for functionality, you need a functional majority party in the House. And if you indict Donald Trump, that may actually push the party to more unity, the Republican Party, against that effort. So it's sort of ironic that the thing that might destabilize one part of the sector of the country, Trump supporters, might actually stabilize the leadership in the Republican Party in the House.
Well,
so these are the two things that I'm looking at most of all.
You also alluded to it, the federal government set to hit the borrowing limit sometime next year. With Republicans taking control of the House, will we default on our debt?
Well, that is just an extraordinarily important concern. You know, if McCarthy can bring, which the Speaker can do, if he appoints the right people to the quote-unquote Rules Committee, that's the committee that determines typically which bills can get to the House floor. If he can get the debt ceiling to the House floor, it'll pass because some Democrats will vote for it. They'll have to vote for it because they don't want Biden administration to have to deal with a default. So the Republicans know that. McCarthy knows that he can lose a good portion of his caucus if he can get the bill and the rule approved and get the debt ceiling to the floor of the House. He can have most of his party vote against it, where the Democrats are going to face enormous pressure to vote for it just because they want to support the Biden administration economically.
And the next question that's raised, will the Republican House impeach Joe Biden?
See, to me, I think that's an overreach. And I think if you've been watching politics long enough, you know that Newt Gingrich eventually, when he ran the House, he overreached and it cost the Republicans, caught him in particular, but it cost the Republicans. And I think this is something that McCarthy has to think about. You know, will the House Republicans care about the 24 presidential race? Or are they just deciding that they want to be in the majority and want to stay in the majority, and impeaching will mobilize their local base in the constituencies that they won? But think about the Congress people from New York in particular, and California, the new Republicans elected there, I'm not sure their constituencies have the stomach to go through an impeachment of Joe Biden. And if those are the seats that gave you the majority, then you have to worry about holding on to them. And that's going to be the calculation McCarthy's going to have to make.
Odd number of years, Wendy, when the bulk of candidate recruitment happens for Senate and gubernatorial candidates. So the question arises in the next minute that we have, will Republican recruitment for these races go better than they did this year?
Well, the big problem in the Senate races were the people who were endorsed by Trump, who were election deniers, who were sort of quote unquote living in the past. There seems to be a lot of rhetoric coming out of Republican Party people saying we've got to move forward, we've got to move forward, look into the future. This is what positions Ron DeSantis, governor-elect, being reelected in Florida, so well going into the 24 races. So we'll see how that goes. But you've got George Santos in New York, who lied pretty much about everything, it seems, in his background. And now you've got a real problem again. You've got a credibility problem. Is this the kind of Republican Party that independents will support in congressional races and the presidential race? And so far, we saw independents go slightly for the Democrats in 2022. And the only way the Republicans hold on to the majority is if they can moderate some of these rhetorical issues and also truthful issues and hold on to those seats they picked up. And that's the big challenge for them. And right now, you know, we have no idea how they're going to manage to do that.
Wendy, always a pleasure. Wendy Schiller, Director of Center for American Politics and Policy at Brown University. You're listening to Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures on the rise this morning, led by technology shares. And we check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 0.4%, up 17 points. Dow futures up 0.2%, or 68 points. NASDAQ futures up 0.7%, or 78 points. The DAX in Germany's up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 0.33, yield 3.87%. The yield on the 2-year, 4.35%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.4% at $1.10 at $77.85 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2%, or $3.10 at $18.1270 an ounce. The euro 1.0633 against the dollar. British pound 1.2028. The yen 133.75. And Bitcoin this morning up 0.5% at about $16,590. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Southwest is trying to recover from one of the worst airline meltdowns in U.S. history. Passengers are still stranded all over the country. Another 2,300 Southwest flights have been canceled for today. The U.S. and Italy join an increasing number of nations requiring COVID tests for travelers from China. Concerns are mounting over the risk of any new variants emerging from the surge in infections in the country. In the NBA, the Nets won their 10th straight. The Wizards and Warriors won. In the NHL, the Bruins beat the Devils 3-1. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. 6:23 on Wall Street. I'm John Tucker. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Overnight, Russia ramped up attacks on major cities in Ukraine. It comes as the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov ruled out peace talks to end the war. That's in spite of major losses and setbacks on the battlefield for Russia. The former U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper weighing in on the conflict. He sat down to discuss the war with Bloomberg's David Westin.
Let's turn to Ukraine, which we've talked about in the past. As you say, there was that dramatic speech from President Zelensky before the joint meeting of Congress. And I wonder what you took away from that and whether, in fact, the United States should be perhaps changing its attitude toward Ukraine, because certainly President Zelensky was not shy about saying he really appreciates what he's gotten, but he needs a lot more. Things like fixed-wing aircraft, things like longer-range missiles.
His visit was very important. His speech was very impressive. It sent a message to the Russians, of course, that the United States was standing behind them, particularly as we head into the winter months right now. And it was a chance for President Biden to message the American people and for us to message the allies. And look, I think we've done a good job, but we could be doing so much more. They do need fixed-wing aircraft. They do need tanks. They do need the means to conduct an offensive campaign, to do a counteroffensive. That's how you break a trench warfare-type stalemate that we're kind of seeing now. That's at the operational level. At the strategic level, they need far more and greater air defenses. And look, the United States has done a lot, but we need our allies to do a whole lot more. Most of our allies have contributed less than $600 million or so in military aid. The United States, tens of billions of dollars. So if we can get more of our allies to do more of that, to provide those critical arms and pieces of equipment that I just mentioned, we could allow the Ukrainians to get on the offensive, to push the Russians out, and bring this war to a quicker conclusion than the path it looks to be on right now.
Well, that's just what I want to ask about, going on the offensive, as you just said, because I think in some quarters it might be thought, well, this is turning sort of into a stalemate and this will go on for a long time and become chronic. It looks like perhaps that's what Vladimir Putin wants. If the Ukrainians are not winning this war, are they losing it ultimately?
No, not necessarily. But again, their country would remain occupied. And what we don't want is another frozen conflict like we have in Georgia or Moldova. So the Ukrainians have the momentum right now. We need to supply them. And you're right. Putin's strategy is to wait us out. I mean, that's why he is hammering Ukrainian cities, infrastructure, energy resources with ballistic missiles and drones. He wants to break the back, break the will of the Ukrainian people. We now see he's putting an embargo, if you will, on countries that put a price cap on oil. He wants to freeze them out, freeze us out a little bit also. He is playing for time, thinking that we will wobble, we will weaken. And look, there's some truth to that in the past. We've seen that. So it's important that we hold on, but at the same time, give Ukraine what they need to win. They have the will, they have the courage, they have the resolve. They've been showing a great deal of grit and success on the battlefield. We need to help enable that.
How important are drones in this battle on both sides?
Drone technology and, of course, counter-drone technology as well, critically important. But you see the Ukrainians now using them to conduct long-range strikes hundreds of miles into Russian territory to attack airfields from which Russians are launching bombers. So they're using it to great skill. And, of course, the Russians are using the Iranian drones to pummel Ukrainian infrastructure. So we need to give them the means to provide adequate air defenses against those so that, again, we can protect civilians in Ukraine and civilian infrastructure.
And that's former Defense Secretary Mark Esper speaking to David Weston on Bloomberg's Balance of Power. You can catch that show weekdays at noon on Bloomberg Radio and Television. Coming up next, this morning's top stories, plus your local headlines and a check on the markets right now ahead of the cash open. Dow futures 66 points higher. First, let's get a look at today's Bloomberg weather forecast. And to do that for us, here's Rob Carolyn.
Some cloudiness will be drifting down from the north and west today, but we should see some sunshine through those clouds. Temperatures up to 45 to 50 this afternoon. Partly cloudy overnight, 30 to 35 in the city, 20s in the suburbs. Partial sun close to 50 tomorrow. The outlook for Saturday, cloudy with rain late in the day, 50 to 55. It looks rainy for New Year's Eve. That rain moves out Sunday. We turn partly sunny. I'm Rob Carolyn with your weekend forecast on Bloomberg 1130.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's coming up on 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning, I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are nearly 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things that you need to know to start your day. Brought to you by Innovation Refunds. Your business may be eligible to receive a payroll tax refund. The application takes around 8 minutes, 8 minutes or less, to see if your small to medium-sized business may be eligible for a refund of up to $26,000 per employee kept on the payroll during the pandemic. Find out at GetRefunds.com. First is COVID cases climb in China. The U.S. plans to require COVID testing for travelers from the country. Officials are concerned about new variants and China's lack of transparency with COVID data. Italy will also begin testing arrivals from China and wants other European countries to do the same.
And we have news on the war in Ukraine this morning. The Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow will not enter into negotiations to end the war. This comes as Russia launched another missile barrage on major cities in Ukraine. The former Defense Secretary Mark Esper says the U.S. can and should provide further support for Ukraine.
It's important that we hold on, but at the same time, give Ukraine what they need to win. They have the will, they have the courage, they have the resolve. They've been showing a great deal of grit and success on the battlefield. We need to help enable that.
Former Defense Secretary Mark Esper speaking with David Weston on Bloomberg's Balance of Power. Catch the show weekdays at noon on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Well, to Wall Street now, John, where layoffs are front and center. Goldman Sachs is working on a fresh round of staff cuts. CEO David Solomon made the announcement in his year-end message to staff, saying the cuts will be unveiled in a matter of weeks.
And looking at markets right now, U.S. futures, they are higher following 2 days of losses. COVID concerns out of China weighing on some of the sentiment, but Jonathan Golub, head of U.S. equity strategy at Credit Suisse, says steady wages can provide some stability next year.
Wages don't look like they're going to fall as much. For the average consumer, they're going to get a stronger wage increase. The things they buy aren't going to go up as much as their wages, and yet jobs are really plentiful.
Jonathan Golub with Credit Suisse says he thinks there will be positive market movement early next year.
And the travel meltdown that stranded thousands of passengers has led to more flight cancellations, John. Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport joins us live with more. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and John. Southwest blames bad weather for its problems, but aviation experts say snow was only one of the elements that created the perfect storm. They point to issues like tight turnaround times, faulty phone systems, and outdated software. Analysts and unions warned for years that Southwest needed to invest in new technology. Those warnings proved costly, as Southwest grounded more than 2,300 additional flights today. But gray skies look to be clearing up for the carrier. So far, Southwest only canceled a few dozen flights for tomorrow. That's according to the flight tracking site FlightAware. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Steve, thank you. That's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Innovation Refunds. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. 6:31 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. The National Guard went door to door in parts of Buffalo to check on people who lost power during the area's deadliest winter storm in decades. Already about three dozen deaths have been reported in western New York from the blizzard. Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown.
Again, as you know, this was a historic storm. Probably the worst storm that the city has seen in over 50 years, and perhaps, maybe, the worst storm in recorded history since these storms have been tracked.
Mayor Brown says a travel ban has been lifted. Congressman-elect George Santos of New York is under investigation by Long Island prosecutors. Revelations surfaced that the now embattled Republican lied about his heritage, education, and professional pedigree as he campaigned for office. Nassau County District Attorney Ann Donnelly, also a Republican, said the fabrications and inconsistencies were nothing short of stunning. The U.S. State Department has approved a possible military sale to Taipei for anti-tank munition laying systems and related equipment. It's for an estimated cost of $180 million. It's opening day to sell legal pot in New York. The first dispensary is in Manhattan at a Housing Works cannabis company in Greenwich Village. Attorney Michael Bass is co-chair of the cannabis law group at Abrams Fensterman.
This is the first dispensary of a program that is still in its infancy. And I suspect the lines are going to be pretty long for some time to come as this program grows and grows.
Attorney Michael Bass says there are limitations in terms of grams and ounces to what you can purchase. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Yeah, it's now 6:33 on Wall Street, and that is time for the Bloomberg Sports Report, being brought to you by your Tri-State Audi dealers. And with the update, here's John Stanshower.
Thanks, John. Nets the first NBA team this season to reel off 10 consecutive wins. They held on in Atlanta, 108-107. The Hawks missed a game-winning shot at the end. Kyrie Irving, 28 points. Kevin Durant had 26 with 16 rebounds. It's the Nets' longest win streak since 2006. Knicks are in San Antonio tonight. The Rangers visit Tampa Bay. The Devils just lost at home to the NHL-leading Bruins 3-1. College hoops, St. John's lost to the Big East to Xavier. Fordham's Atlantic 10 opener, a home loss to Davidson. UConn beat Villanova. The Huskies are 14-0. They are ranked second in the country. Quarterback news, Derek Carr benched by the Raiders. He's been their starter for 9 years with 14 interceptions this season. Jared Stidham will replace him, and this figures the lead to Las Vegas moving Carr in the offseason. The Jets could be looking for a QB. Washington is going back to Carson Wentz, replacing Taylor Heineke. Wentz hasn't started since week 6, and the Commanders are part of that battle for the last two NFC wildcard spots. Miami and New England in it for one wild card in the AFC. They play Sunday in Foxborough. The Dolphins QB will be Teddy Bridgewater. Tua Tagovailoa has his second concussion of the season. They'll play the Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium this afternoon, Syracuse against Minnesota. The Red Sox have signed 37-year-old Corey Kluber. He won two Cy Youngs with Cleveland. He spent this past season with Tampa Bay. He threw a no-hitter in 2020 for the Yankees. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. The Bloomberg Sports Report brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. Right now, S&P futures up 17. It's now 6:35 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in now with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potisk on WHAS in Louisville. We're talking about some negative online reactions to a test run of Taco Bell's plans for new burritos.
I'm Jeff Bellinger, and on Cogo in San Diego, I'll be talking about how Starbucks customers from California and New York accuse the coffee chain of deceptively advertising its sprouted grain bagels.
I'm Kimberly Adams, and on WBZ in Boston, I'll be reporting on Goldman Sachs employees facing a new year with new job cuts.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DAB Radio in London. We've been reporting on the European countries considering more restrictions on travelers from China as Beijing eases its COVID rules.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. It is now 6:37 on Wall Street. That's time for our daily Bloomberg Real Estate Report. And here with that is Bloomberg's Denise Pellegrini.
Inflation is usually pretty good for real estate investments, but Rich Hill, head of real estate strategy and research at Cowan and Steers Capital Management, says not this time.
What is challenging for real estate is stagflation. So what is stagflation? It's an environment where interest rates are rising and growth is slowing. That's exactly what played out for most of 2022, where the Fed had to raise interest rates to combat inflation that was at its highest level since 1980.
On the other hand, Hill says things are looking up for real estate returns in 2023 because
we see a backdrop where growth is slowing still in 2023, but rates are beginning to come down. So we would call that a stagnationary backdrop. As you transition from stagflation to stagnation, that's a much better backdrop for real estate in general.
Economists we surveyed say housing starts and building permits probably continue to fall in December. And that's the Bloomberg Real Estate Report. I'm Denise Pellegrini.
And investors betting against Tesla are getting a big bonanza they've been waiting for, with the electric vehicle maker set to record its worst annual performance on record. Short sellers in the company, these are bearish investors who stand to gain when the price of an asset falls. They're poised to reap market-to-market profits of about $17 billion, making Tesla the most profitable short trade of the year. This is all according to data from S3 Partners. Tesla has tumbled more than 42% in December alone, driving it to a loss of 68% this year. Well, this morning, ahead of the market open, Tesla in the pre-market right now up 4.8%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, December 29th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
new restrictions on travelers from China after the country scales back COVID policies.
Goldman readies for a fresh round of layoffs in the new year.
Markets look for a Santa Claus rally to close 2022.
And Russia rules out peace talks with Ukraine.
Prosecutors are investigating New York Congressman-elect Santos after false claims about his background. Plus, the dig out continues in Buffalo. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. Make it 10 straight for the Nets. A one-point win in Atlanta. The Devils lost to the Bruins. A Big East loss for St. John.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Hey, good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures on the rise this morning. We check the markets all day long here on Bloomberg, with S&P futures up 0.4% or 16 points. Dow futures up 0.2% or 69 points. And NASDAQ futures up 0.7% or 76 points. John.
And Karen, let's begin with new travel restrictions targeting China. As COVID cases climb in the country, the U.S. plans to require COVID testing for travelers coming from China. Let's get the update in this report this morning from Bloomberg's Ed Baxter.
The concern comes as cases spiral upward in China, and with China not releasing data, the U.S. says transparency has disappeared. Health officials say they are concerned about the emergence of new variants, which tend to thrive with so many new cases. The U.S. announcement came after news reports of two flights from China into Milan, Italy, where more than half the passengers tested positive. The passengers will be required to test 2 days before making their flight. The requirement goes into effect January 5th. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. Well, we have news on the war in Ukraine this morning. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow will not enter into negotiations to end the war. The hardline stance comes as Russia launched another missile barrage on major cities in Ukraine. Former Defense Secretary Mark Esper tells us Moscow is digging in for the long haul.
Putin's strategy is to wait us out. I mean, that's why he is hammering Ukrainian cities, infrastructure, energy resources with ballistic missiles and drones. He wants to break the back, break the will of the Ukrainian people. We now see he's putting an embargo, if you will, on countries that put a price cap on oil. He wants to freeze them out, freeze us out a little bit also. He is playing for time, thinking that we will wobble, we will weaken.
Former Defense Secretary Mark Esper spoke with David Westin on Bloomberg's Balance of Power. Catch the show weekdays at noon on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Yeah, let's turn to Wall Street now. Another sign of maybe an economic slowdown. Goldman Sachs is working on a fresh round of staff cuts. And Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett reports they're likely to come in a matter of weeks.
That word from CEO David Solomon in his traditional year-end message to staff. Solomon said, quote, "We are conducting a careful review, and while discussions are still ongoing, we anticipate our headcount reduction will take place in the first half of January." He says there are a variety of factors impacting the business landscape, including tightening monetary conditions that are slowing down economic activity. Earlier this month, sources said the firm may seek to eliminate as much as 8% of its workforce, or up to 4,000 jobs, to contain a slump in profit and revenue. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Well, to markets now, U.S. futures are higher, led by technology shares following 2 days of losses. Concerns are surfacing over the end of China's COVID-zero policies. But Jonathan Golub, head of U.S. equity strategy at Credit Suisse, sees positive signs for the new year.
The market is of the belief that no matter what the Fed says, the likelihood is that the Fed is going to ultimately get closer to their inflation target, and that's a positive. And that's what the market is ultimately fixated on, and I think that's why stocks are going to do pretty well over the next several months.
Jonathan Golub with Credit Suisse says steady wages can provide some stability in 2023.
And overseas stocks in Asia dropped in unison overnight. Let's get the recap now from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
Stocks in Asia tumbled on new concerns that China's reopening would spread COVID cases around the world. There may be a day that investors embrace the reopening, but today was not that day. Equity benchmarks in Japan, Hong Kong, Australia, and South Korea all falling around 1%. Australian 10-year government bond yields rose. The dollar was weaker, and the yen put on gains. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. Well, we also have news out of the Bank of Japan this morning. The BOJ announcing two additional rounds of unscheduled bond purchase operations. The move fights back against traders, betting the BOJ will further relax its yield curve control policy. Well, taking a look at the yen right now, still rising against the dollar at 133.82.
And meanwhile, oil is lower this morning, being tied to concerns over COVID cases surging in China. As we look at Brent crude, the international benchmark, right now down $1.07 a barrel at $82.19.
Well, travel turmoil continues again this morning, John. The travel meltdown that stranded thousands of passengers has led to more flight cancellations at Southwest. Bloomberg's Steve Rappaport joins us live with more. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and John. As Southwest grounds more than 2,300 additional flights today, analysts and unions say this nightmare could have been prevented. They warned for years the carrier was playing a dangerous game by not investing in new technology. Those prophecies proved a disaster for Southwest as it struggles to recover from last week's storm. Rival airlines are mostly back to normal operations. The White House and lawmakers want to know why Southwest can't pick up the pace. Live in New York, I'm Steve Rappaport, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Steve. And we have a couple of notes this morning on Elon Musk companies. Let's start with Twitter, which has restored service hours after thousands of users reported glitches. More than 9,000 users from San Francisco to Hong Kong reported problems accessing the service. And Elon Musk is telling Tesla employees to ignore stock market craziness, as he puts it. His comments come as analysts turn bullish on the stock. Morgan Stanley this morning says derating in the company's stock has created a buying opportunity. Most active in the pre-market right now, Tesla up 4.8%. This is Bloomberg. And it brings us to 6:07 on Wall Street. And let's get to news from around the world and in New York. And for that, we say good morning to Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
John, thank you very much. Buffalo lifted a travel ban just after midnight. It was put in place in the aftermath of the Christmas weekend blizzard that left the city buried under more than 4 feet of snow. Mayor Byron Brown.
Conditions are such that the driving ban can be lifted. We're going to keep a travel advisory in place because there will still be heavy equipment doing work.
Dozens of Buffalo area residents died in the storm. New York Congressman-elect George Santos is under increasing scrutiny. Prosecutors at the federal and state levels are taking a closer look at the Republican. His lies about his past have reportedly led to a federal probe into his finances, with questions now surfacing about $700,000 used to fund his campaign. Prosecutor in Nassau County says she is looking into numerous fabrications and inconsistencies. Nearly 2 years after New York legalized recreational marijuana, New York City's first dispensary is opening its doors to the public today. The Housing Works Cannabis Company in Lower Manhattan is a nonprofit that supports the homeless. Attorney Michael Bass says to beware of certain restrictions under the new laws.
There's going to be very long lines. And my concern is people may lose patients in these lines and just go over to New Jersey to buy cannabis products and bring it back to New York. Well, if you do that, you've committed a federal crime, trafficking the cannabis across state lines. So I urge folks, please don't do that.
Attorney Bass also says there are limitations in terms of grams and ounces to what you can purchase in New York. The fallout continues over the crisis at the southern border after the Supreme Court let Title 42 stay in place for now. People in El Paso, Texas, are protesting the extension of Title 42. The pandemic-era policy allows the U.S. to expel migrants back across the border without an asylum hearing. Bye-bye 2022, ahead of the big ball drop in New Year's Eve. Good Riddance Day was held in Times Square. Visitors could write down what they want to leave in the past. This man is a cancer survivor.
Got diagnosed in January of this year and went through chemo, radiation, surgery.
Many others were tired of COVID. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is now 6:10 on Wall Street. And it's time now for the Bloomberg Sports Report, being brought to you by your Tri-State Audi dealers. Let's get the update from John Stasher. Morning, John.
Good morning, John. The Nets and Hawks were in Atlanta. Hawks were without three injured starters. Nets riding the long win streak. They had a double-digit lead, but then the Hawks rallied.
1:45 to go in the game. All even at 104. Durant up top, moving left, stops at a dime, fade away, going for KD. 106-104 Brooklyn.
And WFAN, Atlanta missed a shot to win it at the buzzer, and the Nets made it 10 wins in a row. It's their longest win streak in 16 years. 108-107, Kyrie Irving, 28 points. 15 of those came in the fourth quarter for Kevin Durant. 26 points, 16 rebounds, 8 assists. Nets look to keep the streak going. Saturday at Charlotte, Knicks coming off that overtime loss in Dallas, play tonight in San Antonio, and since winning seven in a row, the Knicks have lost their last four. Devils beaten in Newark by the NHL leading Bruins 3-1. Rangers visit Tampa Bay tonight. The Islanders are home for Columbus. St. John's hosted Xavier, trailed by 11 at the half. The Red Storm lost 84-79 and now 11-3, 1-2 in the Big East. Fordham was 12-1, but the Rams lost their Atlantic 10 opener at Rose Hill to Davidson, 57-43. Fordham only 14 points in the first half. There's college football in New York this afternoon. Syracuse and Minnesota. The Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium. Last night's Liberty Bowl in Memphis went triple overtime. Kansas rallied from 25 down, but Arkansas won 55-53. National semifinals Saturday. Michigan, TCU, and Phoenix. Georgia takes on Ohio State in Atlanta. Winners play January 9th in L.A. John Stasiauer, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, John. Thanks very much. The Bloomberg Sports Report, Brought to you by Audi. Don't let somebody else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer or get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information. Head of the cash open on Wall Street futures right now. I'll point to a higher open. Dow futures up 88. S&P E-mini futures up 20. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
Live from coast to coast, from New York to San Francisco, Boston to Washington, D.C., nationwide on Sirius XM, the Bloomberg Business App, and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And good morning, I'm John Tucker. Well, we had concerns about the spread of COVID-19 from China, weakening some of the risk appetite in one of the final trading days of the year. Yesterday's session, S&P 500 lost 1.2%. Right now, let's get you set up for the trading day ahead. We are joined by Mahmoud Nourani, the CEO and co-founder at Quant Insight. With the COVID risk in the markets, you have a sense of, well, here we go again with COVID?
Hi, good morning from London, John. As far as COVID in China is concerned, all eyes are on that, but it is really a bit of a wild card. You know, on the one hand, you have opening up and some sort of resumption of economic activity. On the other hand, it's really hard to get a handle on, you know, the impact that it's going to have on economic activity. So a real wild card, and that really adds to the uncertainty going into 2023, and there's a lot of it.
What can you pick up from the ashes of 2022, if anything, with risk assets and beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we do at Quant Insight is we like looking at the data, and we gather millions of data points a day and have this big machine that basically processes it all, looks at all the daily little variations we see in information on GDP and inflation and what the Fed's expected to do, and sort of relates that to asset prices to help us understand what's really going on. And the 2022 story was very clear, and that was really that the only game in town was the Fed and where they were going to stop. But what we started to see in the last few weeks is that all the indicators are showing that the importance of the Fed is diminishing and the importance of the real economy and the credit cycle is increasing. Now, we've sort of had this weird six-month period where, although the Fed has been tightening a lot and very quickly, U.S. real GDP growth has actually been positive. So we've got positive GDP growth in Q3, and it looks like Q4 will be positive. And I noted with interest that Goldman's chief economist yesterday was on LinkedIn talking about their forecast for 2023 for U.S. real GDP growth, and he had that as positive 1%. In the other corner, you have, of course, everyone talking about the inverted yield curve and how that's a very reliable predictor of recession. And so what it boils down to for 2023 is how's the real economy going to do, and how's the credit cycle going to do, and is all this tightening we've seen from the Fed finally going to bite when it comes to real GDP growth? Are we going to see unemployment rise? That's the big question. And where we are right now is very unclear. I mean, if you look at U.S. corporate bankruptcies in 2022, they are at a 10-year low. You know, the consumer has done way better than expected. Whether that's because they've been spending on credit cards is an open question. Corporate credit spreads, which give you an idea of sort of the market's expected default rate for corporates and how much pain they see next year, is not really flashing any red signs as yet. And so the net result is you've got the equity market stuck between this sort of 3,600 and 4,000, 4,100 sort of zone while we see what the economy does. And so what we're doing at QI is watching the real economy data very, very closely as we enter 2023.
Where did the earnings expectations fit into all of this?
Well, you know, the current earnings expectations are moderate, kind of small positive. And you have a bit of a disagreement out there because a lot of the equity market bears are expecting an earnings recession in 2023. But that is based on the view that the U.S. economy is going to go into recession. So again, you know, if we do get this soft landing and some of the pundits are right that you get 1% positive real GDP growth in 2023 and the Fed engineers this kind of amazing soft landing where they've managed to slow the economy down and inflation comes down, and you're still growing at around 1%, again, that speaks to more of a sideways type of equity market and no sort of huge type of bear market that we saw this year.
All right. We'll leave it there. Mahmoud Nirani, the CEO and co-founder of Quant Insight, joining us from London this morning. Appreciate your time. Ahead of the cash open on Wall Street this morning, we have futures for now in the green, the Dow futures. They're 70 points higher. That's a rise of about 0.2%. S&P E-mini futures up 17. That's up 0.4% right now. And tech heavy NASDAQ futures, 79 points higher. That is up 0.75%. And look at NYMEX crude right now. This is West Texas Intermediate, down 1.5%. Off the session lows right now, down $1.23 a barrel at $77.78. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.